Blog Talk Radio.
One, everything is going to be all right. You're listening to Tippy Talk. Time now to sit back, relax, listen, and enjoy the moment. Newborn is the official band that provides all the music for Tippy Talk. To hear more of the music, you can go to newbornband.com and enjoy their wonderful sound. And now it is time to step into the Tippy Zone, where we explore the other side of reality, the side that allows you to reshape your life, step into your power, and connect to the fact that we are all one. Welcome to Tippy Talk, where we go from where you are to where you want to be. I'm your host, Tippy Feldstein. Hey, everybody. Good morning and good day, wherever you are listening. This is your day. This is my favorite day because today we are talking to Alan James, who is the voice of all the music for Tippy Talk. And I'm so excited. I can hardly contain myself. And I'm so grateful that we have Alan James because he's not only a musician. Turns out there's so much more to him. He's a poet and an author and a musician, and he writes the lyrics. And I don't even know what other things he has hidden under his belt. So I'd like to welcome Alan. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm so excited to have you back here. We have not talked to you in such a long time.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, it's
good
been
morning
a while.
And welcome.
It's been 3 years.
Yeah, It's been a long time, but I can see that you've been so busy doing all kinds of stuff that we're going to talk about today, and we're just seems like we're growing and growing. So tell me about it, Alan. What have you been up to?
Well, I've been writing a book that I just published a month ago. I've been recording music with my band. We've just released an EP, and then I've also been doing stuff outside of my band with other artists. So yeah, I've just been doing any kind of artistic ideas that come to mind. I go and I pursue them. So
right, that sounds great. So so we don't really know much about you as a person. Are you right now, you live in New York, maybe more specifically in Brooklyn?
Yeah, I'm living in Brooklyn right now.
And what does the regular Alan do when he's not doing music and writing poetry and working hard in all kinds of projects?
Well, right now I have my summer job, and I work as a lifeguard on Coney Island. After the summer ends, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to be doing. I'm just another struggling artist who has no idea what he's doing. So, yeah.
And that's fantastic, actually. I just think that people who really are control freaks and are really hung up I know exactly what I'm doing and I know exactly what I want the outcome to be. The outcome can never be what you know that you think that it will be. The outcome will be what it will be. The fact is that you're producing the stuff that you are driven to produce. But I think you're a little bit modest about the lifeguard job. I just heard recently that you did something pretty amazing as a swimmer. What was it?
I don't know what you're talking about, to be honest.
I don't know. Did you swim?
Who told you?
Did you break any records swimming?
No, no, not me. Definitely not.
No, like 6 days
no.
or something?
Oh, man. maybe a personal record. It's certainly no record worth mentioning.
No world record, but definitely
no.
worth mentioning. But no. So you're a pretty good swimmer, right? And you love being on the beach all summer.
I'm okay. I'm not the best swimmer. I'm not the worst. I'm getting better, you know. I never swam for a team or anything. So I even failed my lifeguard exam when I was 17 the first time I took it. So I really had to, it's just another thing I had to work hard at.
Wow. You know, the interesting things that we remember, you were 17 and failing is such a traumatic thing that's probably something that you'll carry around with you when you're 107. You'll say, oh, you know, when I was 17, I failed the life exam, the life test. But I guess you took it again and you passed because you're working as a lifeguard.
Yeah, I've been passing 12 years now. So.
Right. So that little failure was not going to hold you back and say, nope, I failed, that's it, I'm not going to do it?
Oh, no, not at all. It motivated me, if anything.
Right, and I think that's really one of your big secrets, because I'm sure you have a lot of them, is when something doesn't go your way and you don't really succeed right away, it motivates you, as opposed to most people, it will discourage them and discourage them and make them stop. And for you, it's like, oh, my God, I couldn't make it. Well, I have to make it now, right?
You know, sometimes. I can't say I'm like that all the time because, you know, sometimes I get discouraged and then I just stay discouraged. And it would take one of my friends or a family member to kind of get me out of it. But, you know, there were times where, like, the lifeguard thing, I'm motivated by my failures. But it's not always. It's not a constant. So I'm human, you know.
Yeah. I guess you are human. Shoot, for a minute there, I thought you weren't. You just ruined my delusion completely.
Is this call over now?
That's it. You're done.
All right.
But you have a new book out, and I just love the title of the book. And don't tell me it isn't special, because I don't know. It's like really something that not too many people would think about. So what's the title of the book?
It is called Hell is a Cajun Heaven.
Hell is a Cajun Heaven. And I think what you're saying is that describes something very personal to you, right?
It does. Yeah.
Do you want to share what it describes for you, what it means?
I guess it entails like a lot of different things, but initially, I came up with the title just through experience of what suffering meant to me. And for me, it was the fact that everything on the outside was going great. Like, my life was going great. If somebody were to look into my life, they would be like, oh, this guy has it all, blah, blah, blah. Everything's going great for him. But on the inside, it was the complete opposite. And I think having that parallel made it only worse. Because it was kind of like I had this beautiful, delicious apple dangling right in front of me, but I can't reach it. And if I could reach it, well, then I don't know, I wouldn't be able to enjoy it. And for me, that was the true definition of hell, rather than not having that apple in the first place and just being and just suffering in a world of suffering instead of suffering in heaven, if that makes sense.
Yeah, actually, I think this is really profound, and I think you're totally right, because when it's in on the outside, like, you have everything, and so the expectation from everybody and from yourself is, well, look, I have everything, I should be really happy. But yet, when you're in that atmosphere, that it seems on the outside that you have everything, but inside you're like, wait a minute, what is going on here? And you're not ecstatically happy. That feeling makes you feel worse, because now you're feeling guilty. Like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be really happy.
Yeah,
I have everything.
I can definitely see that form of hell being one of the worst forms of hell. Absolutely.
The shame aspect is a big one, for sure. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It kind of reminds me, I was in Israel a few years ago. I think it actually was a month after we talked last time, which was a long time ago. And I'm sitting in this most beautiful setting. The ocean was sparkling in front of me. And the ocean over there is not really an ocean. It's a sea, so the waves are not that big. And the sky was like the brightest blue. You couldn't ask for anything more. And I'm sitting there, and there are signs everywhere on how to get to shelter, how to protect yourself from a bomb. And here I am in the most really picture-perfect heaven environment, and I'm seeing in my mind a boat coming up with a bunch of people with bombs and guns out to do the most bloodiest, disgusting thing. And it seemed so inappropriate, but yet so scary, because if I was sitting in a place where it was raining and ugly and thundering and somebody comes out and he's doing something bad, it's almost like expected to go with the atmosphere. But when you're sitting in the most beautiful corner in the world and you're seeing kids running to shelter, and it's just so incongruent that it's the worst kind of hell. You're right. You know, I never thought of it. Amazing.
Right.
You are amazing. See, I was right.
Well, yeah, and I also think there's also the aspect of that if for example, I'll give you an example. I was in Hawaii a couple of months ago, and it's definitely nothing short of paradise over there. But what I realized was that regardless, you know, where I was in the world, my problems were still inside of me. I couldn't just leave them behind. And when you come to the realization that you can live in paradise and still be miserable, well, I think that is the ultimate definition of hell, when you realize that hell is actually inside of you, not outside of you, because then you can't escape, you know, you can't run from it. And then on top of that, you're like, well, what else is there now? Everything in my life is great, and I still feel this way. And I think that's why many like famous people, many celebrities, you know, turn to drugs or commit suicide, because, you know, how can they still feel so terrible inside when they're loved and admired by, you know, the entire world, and yet they're still unfulfilled? Like, what more is there? So they kind of lose hope. It's like a hopeless feeling. Yeah.
Wow, you said two things that I think are really important. I spend a lot of time in Hollywood with celebrities, and one of the things that I found with them is when they're admired and literally worshipped by thousands, if not millions of people, one of the dilemmas that they go through is, I don't deserve it. And when they feel they don't deserve it, they want to do something ugly to make people realize, hey, I'm not as great as you think I am. I think you just experienced that with me when here I am saying how great you are, how talented you are, and you're like, no, wait a minute, I'm not that great. And so you kind of feel, wait a minute, I don't really deserve that. Imagine that on a huge scale where thousands and millions of people are worshiping you, how guilty you would feel knowing that you're not perfect.
Yeah, oh, and so, I suffer from that tremendously.
Yeah.
There's always that voice in the back of my head, you know, that even right now, like, what are you saying, Alan? Who are you? You're not an authority on anything right now. So, you know, that voice is alive and well in my head. But it's something, I don't know, I guess it's something human, and you have to be able to.
Right. But the other thing that you said, and the other side of the coin that is really powerful and really profound, is that the key and the answer to everything, of changing everything, is not on the outside, it's inside of you. And the question is, who controls what's inside of you? So if what's inside of you is saying, who the hell am I and I don't deserve it, then you still have the control and the ability to change that and say, hey, you know what, I'm okay. I deserve it. I'm enough. It's okay. I'm not perfect. I'm human. And you can actually also, as much as you can suffer through it, you can also change it and turn it all around to make your inside match your outside.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's the blessing of it, of realizing that you're creating your own hell, is that you can create your own heaven too. You know, you have the power to create hell. You have the power to create heaven, but you have the power. And I think most people, like we said, they're ashamed of that power. Not when it comes to creating, you know, misery, but then when it comes to creating a life of abundance, I think there's a sense of guilt that's holding them back from doing so. But yeah,
exactly. It's the only thing that holds them back.
Right. Yeah.
And you started saying, I didn't mean to cut you off. And you think that.
I forgot.
I blew it. See, I blew you, and I cut you off right then.
I mean, okay. I don't think the people's there. So.
Yeah. So in the book Hell is a Cage in Heaven, you actually have one poem that is called Hell is a Cage in Heaven.
Yeah.
And do you want to read that poem for us?
Ooh. Okay. Do I have a choice?
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I would love to hear it.
I'm way more nervous reading poetry than I am singing songs or anything like that. But of course, yeah, I'll read it. Okay. So yeah, this is the title track, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It goes, I've read the ancient scriptures and memorized each sonnet. Like a whore, I laid in bed with every mystic sage and prophet. Slowly earned my winds of change to buy the promise of a ring. There is no one as clever as the faithful bride of spring. So I asked myself at every end, has wisdom made a fool of me? To lead me to the great ascent and shatter both my knees. To hang my wits above me in a tightly knotted noose. And watch my freedom atrophy until I can barely move. Another heart seduced by sorrow, afraid to leave its burning home. Where hopeless thoughts become the laurels on which I rest my aching bones. And now I'm sleeping in the fire of the damned souls that came before. Hell is a cage in heaven, and we're the ones who shut the door.
Wow. Well, for someone who doesn't want to read, you do a great job reading it.
I love the last two lines.
Hell is a cage in heaven, and we're the ones who shut the door. I can't tell you how much that talks to me, and I'll tell you why, because I had a near-fatal accident that I almost died on my birthday. So that was kind of what I thought my birthday nightmare, and it turned out to be the biggest gift I ever had, because that was what I realized from that. I realized that we're the ones that shut the door, but it also made me realize that we're the ones that opened the door. Nobody else can ever open the door for us. I can show you how to open the door, but ultimately, if you don't open it, it ain't going to open. It's just not going to do it.
Yeah.
So for me, that was a life changer. And I think you captured the idea of the torment and both sides of it so beautifully in this poem that looking through each sentence, I'm not going to go through each sentence with you, but you have so much more in it than meets the eye, so much more to it, because people always give their power away to somebody else to control their life, whether it's a guy driving down the street that gives you the finger, you give them the power to get upset for 3 hours, or
right.
It's someone that you love that maybe does things that are crossing your boundaries.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we hold the key.
Absolutely.
And so the question is,
What is the question?
So the question is, how can we take that key and maneuver it to do the things we actually want to do, not the things that make us miserable, the things that make us happy?
Well, it's a good question. I think it's a process of, first of all, I think it's realizing that we are worthy of having that key and using it to create a life of abundance. And then secondly, I think it's letting go of whatever ails us and whatever, for whatever reason we think we're at fault for, or just letting go of the past in general and forgiveness, I guess. Because, yeah, I think that's what holds us back mostly.
Letting go of the past.
No.
I think that's really what it is, letting go of the past. So basically, if we are able to let go of the past, and instead of living in the past in our head, live into the future, in the future, it could change everything.
Yeah,
so,
well, present too. I find that, like, I look at animals, for example, dogs who've been abused or been homeless, and you see these YouTube videos of people finding them and then all of a sudden nurturing them, and then 2 months later or a month later, they're like brand new, they're happy, they're running around. And I think dogs or animals in general are able to heal a lot faster because they don't hold on to the trauma. They don't, because they're always living in the moment. So they're sort of incapable of holding on to it. Or it's same if you see like a dog with one leg, like the dog isn't walking around on one leg like, oh, I have one leg, then all the other dogs have four legs. It's not wallowing in its misery. It doesn't have the capability to do that. It's just happy with what it has, and it's always in the present moment. But, you know, we have something called consciousness and memory, and it kind of screws us over sometimes.
Kind of, sort of, really does. So, yeah, I guess dogs, or if you see little kids who don't sit around and fret, they're just kind of taking in life with so much energy, right?
Yeah.
And exactly. They can have, like, the biggest fight and cry and scream and yell, and then 2 minutes later they're running around like nothing happened.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think about I'm always thinking about myself, you know,
right.
Or my life, or my problems, my this, my that, and something that always brings me great relief is when I forget about myself, and I focus on other people, or situations, or just nature, or anything that, you know, brings me outside of myself. It's almost as if I don't have to try to heal myself. I just have to let go, and the healing takes place on its own. So that's what I mean, I guess, by letting go of the past, of everything in your mind, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I think that's a great way to live, but I think what you're really talking about is forgiveness, forgiving the past and saying, okay, it happened, let me take it from there and really enjoy the moment and plan for a better future.
Right, right. Because I think no matter how much you live, you know, you do activities that that kind of put you out of your body and out of your mind and into the present moment, all those traumatic feelings will come up regardless. And it's when they come up that forgiveness comes into play, that you just have to remind yourself that it's okay and forgive yourself right then and there in that moment, and keep doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and forgive yourself and forgive other people for doing stupid things, because a lot of people do stupid things. I mean, we all do stupid things.
Yeah. It's easier to forgive others than yourself.
It's easier for you to forgive others than to forgive
yourself.
For me,
at least.
I think it actually... I think it comes together. I mean, it's easier to forgive... It's more easier to forgive others when you can learn to forgive yourself. I think it comes hand in hand. But if you have this issue of not being worthy, then it might go the other way. If by forgiving others, you can then forgive yourself too.
Right, right.
So that's one of the big things that you said, that we're the ones that who shut the door. And then another thing that you said is that you can run away from things, but wherever you go, there you are. Yeah, like you really can't run away from yourself. So no matter where you go and no matter what you do, you're still right there with you.
Yes, yes. Though I do think, having said that, I do think running away has its purpose, like physically going, traveling, going somewhere else, because it's very hard to heal in an environment that made you sick. So it's not that your problems are going to go away, but you're going to have breathing room to heal rather than staying in the environment that made you sick. So it is important also to physically remove yourself from an environment that's not helping you, you know, or that's reminding you of everything that's wrong. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But what you're saying is definitely going away will help you, but still going to have to do the work.
Oh, yeah. It's not. Yeah, it's just a tool, but it's not going to. You're gonna pack your problems in your suitcase wherever you go. So,
right.
Yeah.
So you still have to do the work. So you might not be able to do the work right in the middle of the chaos that created the problem to begin with. I thought that was also.
Yeah, what I'm just trying to say is that the mistake is thinking that you're gonna travel and then that you're gonna be rid of all your problems. That's not the case. Like, you know, be ready to do work wherever you go.
Right. So I think that's really profound because a lot of people forget about their problems when they're away, but then they don't work on it and they don't work on themselves. So when they come back, everything is exactly as it was. It doesn't get better just because you went away just for a little while. It's like doing drugs, okay? So you might take the drug and for a little while you'll forget about all the things, but you're not working on it. You're just taking something to forget. And then when you come back, sometimes it seems even worse because now you're like back into this and you were so great before. So, yeah, the work's got to be done, bottom line.
Yeah, the work has to be done. But I'm going through this right now more than ever. And I'm sort of, you know, I'm questioning whether how much work should I be doing versus how much should I really just be forgetting and creating a new reality of positivity and all that. So there's always a balance, I think, going on between kind of doing the work and also just forgetting about the past, you know, not, you know, digging in all the time and, like I was saying, letting go. But I guess that is part of the work.
Okay. Well, the truth is that living in the past is very painful to live. That's the cage that we put ourselves into. So every time that the past comes up, we have to reverse this and say, what do my planning for the future? So if we living in the present and the moment, obviously we got that. That's the healthiest place to be. But when things come into your head, like, oh, my God, look what happened to me yesterday. The son of a bitch did this and this and this and this. I'm thinking, okay, so what am I planning for tomorrow? And my plans for tomorrow are always not going to be dark and gloomy. My plans for tomorrow are always going to be so much more fun than what happened yesterday. So trying to live in the present and in the future instead of living in the past is where it is. But you can never forget the past. You just don't have to dwell on it. It's you. Whatever you are is the sum total of your past experiences. Question is, do you want to live in the past or do you want to live in the present and the future? Because that's going to make a difference between life and death, between happy and sad, or tormented and excited to create new things. I think that's really profound.
Yeah.
And I think it's universal. It's not just you. I think everybody is constantly going through this cycle and circle all the time. Like, I don't want to be unhappy. I don't want to be miserable. How do I do it the best way? How do I get out of this cage? And I love this cage in hell, in heaven. It's amazing.
You know, but sometimes I really think it's so simple. The way to get out of it is very simple, but it's too simple for us to really grasp because we're used to life being complicated. I'm a firm believer that healing can, it takes a while, but at the same time, it happens in a moment's notice too. I think we have that power to heal ourselves very, very quickly. But I don't think we can accept that fact. It's almost too good to be true sometimes. Do you know what I mean? I think the hardest, one of the hardest parts, at least for me, in the healing process is accepting mm-hmm. the fact that I'm already healed. I think that's like the hardest thing for mm-hmm. me to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a common thing, I think, for most people is, and also there is kind of like a zone which they call comfortably miserable. When you get into this place where you're miserable, but that's your comfort zone, and then letting that go, it's like, okay, so is that going to leave me uncomfortable in a place I don't know? Could you imagine waking up ecstatically happy tomorrow? Who will Alan be if he does that? Will you really be ever yourself? You know? Would that be really you, or would you now not exist anymore? It's scary.
It is scary. It's embarrassing to say that it's scary, but it is.
Right.
You gotta laugh at it too.
Yeah, I can see that. So basically, you're talking about the cycle of life, the dilemma of life, of all of us wanting to get away from the pain and suffering and walk into the light and be able to smile and knowing now, even now, you know that you're the one that has the key. You're still kind of in a place where, what happens if I use that key? And what happens if I actually can do that? Do I deserve it? Am I going to really be able to? And it's all those silly little things that stop us from doing the really, like you said, it's so simple, but yet so complex. Crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally insane.
Yeah.
And so what you do, one of the things you do to, one of the things we do to get away from that pain is you put up some pretty cool concerts and music. Music probably makes you feel really good, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you are actually doing a concert this weekend, aren't you?
That's right. This Saturday, August 31st at the Delancey, mm-hmm. 8 p.m. I'll be playing
in
with my band.
New York City?
In New York City.
What's the address?
Ooh.
Okay, it's called the Delancey. So
it's called the
one way to know where. Yeah. So one way you know if you want to come see Alan James, who is performing there from 8 to 8:30, a half hour show.
Yeah.
Fantastic show, fantastic music. As you can tell from the music that you heard right here, it's really. It's really profound music, some of it, and some of it is just enjoyable to sit back and relax and enjoy. And if you want, I can post the address here. You can actually contact me at tippytalkshow@gmail.com, and I can email you the address. But it's this Saturday, this week, the 31st of August, at the Delancey. If you're driving, all you have to do is go over the Manhattan Bridge. If you happen to be in California or Switzerland, you might want to come in for a half-hour concert. I think it's a good idea, too. Come on and fly in for a Saturday night in New York City. How can you go wrong, right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Capital.
And, yeah. So before we let you go, do you feel comfortable enough to read another poem? One more poem from the book. And if you guys want to get a copy.
Now I'm good to go. Yeah.
You ready to go? So also, I just want to let everybody know that if you like this poem, then you want to get more of it. You have a whole book full of it in a book called A Cage. Hell is a Cage in Heaven. And you can go to Amazon and get that. All you have to do is type in the name, Hell is a Cage in Heaven. But if you don't find it that way, look for Alan James and Amazon. Okay, now we're going to let you read the poem called, which one? What's the name of this one?
This one's called As Real as Pain.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah.
I want the kind of love that's just as real as pain that you don't recover from, nor want to anyway. An elated sense of presence, like needles through a hand, breathing at the mercy of my heart's every command. The sweet rush of adrenaline from stepping on a nail, how it grabs my blood's attention and keeps my armor frail. And if I should be so lucky to have the state of sharp pain linger. I hope one day you'll meet me the way a hammer meets a finger.
The way a hammer meets a finger. Know what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this poem too, actually. I really do, because basically you're describing love and pain as both sides of the same coin.
Hmm. There's that, yes. Well, for I guess it's not about the pain, but so much as the realness of the pain. There's no, mm-hmm. when you're in pain, when you're in physical pain, let's say, there's no denying it. You are very, very much present in the moment. Nothing brings you into the moment as pain, right? You stub
right.
your toe, all your attention is on that toe, on the pain.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more real in that moment. So in a sense, I want the same for love, too. I want love to be as real as pain is.
Mhm. Mhm.
Where there's no denying.
Yeah. Right. Right. Something that will force you to be at the moment, and that nothing can take your attention away from it because it's so real.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. This is a great way of describing love and pain as something. Well, you're not saying that you want to be in pain. You're saying you want love to be as real as the pain.
Mhm. Yeah. Exactly.
And it's interesting, you mentioned adrenaline, the rush of adrenaline, and I just read a survey this morning that adrenaline, rush of adrenaline, actually can totally predict your behavior as how you react to everything in life. I think they did a test on lobsters who have a very simple nervous system, and the lobster that had the most adrenaline rush was the one, the leader of the pack. He was the boss. And then as the adrenaline,
yeah.
You knew that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I read that in the book, actually, yeah. They had an experiment a lot. They used lobsters as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, it's
yeah. Yeah, I thought that was pretty amazing. So with us, it's the same thing. When we have the adrenaline, it can change everything in your life. And the adrenaline rush comes from love, comes from anything that gets us excited, anything that makes us feel good. And so I like the fact that you threw it in here, because it's very profound. I can tell the way your brain works. It works with real things down to the moment. You really are in the present of pain and pleasure. The pain and pleasure principle.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I get.
Yeah, I mean, adrenaline is just another one of those phenomenons where you're very much present and in the moment. So.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other side of the pain, where they both force you into the same place, but the sensation is exact opposite.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that has been very profound. I just thought I was going to be talking about music and a book, and I did not realize how deep your thinking is and how profound this could be. I'm very, very surprised, pleasantly surprised and amazed at the things that you come up with. So thank you so much for it. And yes, you do deserve it. You are enough.
Well,
we really appreciate it. You're welcome. really appreciate it. And if anybody wants to see more of this or listen to you sing, they're welcome to go to the concert on Saturday night, the 31st of August, at the Delancey, which is in New York City. You can email me for more information, or you could actually buy a little bit of a discounted ticket in advance also. So if you do want to go, please RSVP or call me or email me. Go to Amazon, check out the book. I think it's a great book to have to really make you think about the important things in life, to to really bring you down and do some contemplation, which I don't know about anywhere else, but in New York City, we don't have enough time to really sit down and just contemplate. And I think that's why it's even more important to do it. So once again, Alan, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for doing what you do.
Oh, it was great to be back, and great talking to you as always.
Yes, and we're not going to wait another 3 years to bring you back. That's for sure.
No, let's do it again soon, for sure.
Okay. Well, let's enjoy the weekend, everybody, and I'll meet you down at the UNC 8 o'clock on Saturday night, Alan. Have a great weekend.
Take care. See ya.